Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signe Darpinian, co-author of No Way, a teen's guide to positive body image, food, and emotional wisdom with Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London, who just won the 2020 British Book Awards for Best Academic, Educational, and Professional Publisher of the Year. My guest today, Randy Krager, is the co-author of the best-selling book, Stop Walking on Eggshells, Taking Your Life Back When Someone You Love Has Borderline Personality Disorder, as well as two other books about borderline personality disorder, otherwise known as BPD. It sold 1.1 million copies in 15 different languages, and therapists refer to it as the gold standard for family members coping with the behaviors of their loved ones with BPD. Randy has been consulted on a major motion picture and given lectures to clinicians in Japan as well as the United States. The third edition of Stop Walking on Eggshells is coming out this December 2020. Randy is here today to talk to us about boundaries in general, as well as boundaries with individuals who have personality disorders. Randy, I know that there are approximately 10 personality disorders, but in your book, you mainly focus on borderline personality disorder and a bit of narcissistic personality disorder, and we'll call that NPD. And I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about what those signs would be.
To define narcissistic personality disorder, we kind of have a popular understanding of it when we say that somebody is narcissistic. But basically, a person with narcissistic personality disorder has what we call a false self. They generally, but not always, feel a lot of shame inside, just like somebody with borderline personality disorder. And they tend to hide that by putting on a mask of Superman. And they pretend that they're a really great person and they're not a loser and they're the only person who can solve our problems and they're great and everything is about them. And they kind of tend to forget that they put this mask on, and so that they even fool themselves. To a certain degree, they tend to forget. A person with narcissistic personality disorder can't say that they're wrong, because that would make them all bad. They also have this splitting. So they can't ever say that they're wrong, and they can't ever say that anything is their fault. They always see everything as about them. And then there's this, I am the only one who can do such and such. There's a feeling of superiority. There's a feeling of entitlement. For example, I should be able to do things that nobody else can do. So that's a little bit about narcissistic personality disorder.
Randy, I've got a question for you. I'm a therapist, and as you can imagine, I don't see many people with narcissistic personality disorder in my caseload. As you say in your book, it's typically the people that are in a relationship with somebody who has NPD that I would see in my office. If an individual is in a relationship with somebody with NPD, and it appears that they tend to know other people better than themselves because they're interested in, you know, what you call a narcissistic supply. When you have like a boundary, for example, and you take that supply away from the person with NPD, do you have any tips for the individual who's been cut off and feeling inadequate and almost in a way wanting that sort of unhealthy supply? Any tips for that particular individual?
All right. Well, let's talk first about what narcissistic supply is. So narcissistic supply is what gas is to a car. While people with borderline personality disorder cannot manage their own emotions, so they depend upon other people to do it for them, people with narcissistic personality disorder cannot generate their own self-esteem, so they depend upon other people to do it for them. And one of the big ways that people generate self-esteem for somebody with narcissistic personality disorder is through narcissistic supply. And that is just about everything that says you are a wonderful person.
Could you define non?
The person in a relationship who does not have the disorder.
Okay. And so I'm assuming that there's some secondary gain that the non gets from being somebody's narcissistic supply. So when it's taken away,
it can be their, you know, their abandonment bells can go off. And I'm wondering if you had any tips for what an individual could do to, you know, that wants to stay gone and doesn't want to be in this dynamic and wants to break that pattern.
If somebody who's in a relationship with somebody with NPD sets a boundary that cuts off narcissistic supply, the person with NPD is going to get very angry or will react badly in some way. And the person who's in the relationship is going to have to decide what's more important, their integrity and their boundary, or this drug-like feeling that they get and this euphoria that they get, which is a false feeling from this narcissist who is basically trying to make them feel that way so that they can get more narcissistic supply. So you have to decide, do I want to have a boundary so I can have a life outside of this person? Or do I just want to be a provider of narcissistic supply? Being a provider of narcissistic supply is a little bit like being a cow on a dairy farm. It's being milked once a day. I mean, that's basically what you do. I mean, I had a mother with borderline personality disorder and a father with narcissistic personality disorder. And every once in a while, my father would kind of like try and get me to invite him to go to lunch. He would call me and he would kind of hint around. And then I would finally figure out what he wanted. He wanted me to invite him to lunch. He didn't really want to go to lunch. He just wanted to be invited to lunch because that made him feel wanted. And I said to myself, well, I'm not getting anything out of this. This doesn't do much for me. And I said, I'm not going to be used like this. It's not healthy to get your jollies out of being used for narcissistic supply. So my answer for anybody who is getting their jollies out of being used for narcissistic supply is have an authentic, real relationship, not a pretend relationship with somebody who's simply using you.
That answer is going to help so many people. I remember specifically reading Stop Walking on Eggshells in the earlier editions and feeling so relieved, so validated to hear or to read that this imbalanced behavior wasn't me, I guess you could say. And at the time I was reading it, I was reading it with a relative more in mind. And I should make a little side note here that, you know, to any of the relatives out there listening, that it's not you. This person's no longer with us. But I'm assuming that other people feel the same way when they read about BPD. But what I find difficult when the individual is someone with BPD that is more explosive, instead of directing anger inward, they direct it outward and they lash out on you. I find it difficult for it not to plant a seed of doubt. And I know it's crazy on one hand to expect balanced behavior from somebody out of balance, but do you have any tips for when somebody plants a seed of doubt and they're in a space that is totally out of balance and you start to kind of take in what they are saying as truth?
We call this brainwashing. And what the person does is they always see something, they seize something with a little bit of truth in it. It's got to have
that some makes truth. Sense. It has some truth, or I don't think it could
some
work.
Truth to it.
Right.
But here's the thing. People who love you don't take things that are a little bit of truth that make you look not the best or take first of all, we all get to have flaws. Just like your borderline or narcissistic loved one gets to have flaws, you get to have flaws too. So first of all, who wrote the law and said that we all don't get to have flaws? So whatever that little bit of truth is, yay flaw. Great. So you're a little bit messy. So you're a little bit too neat. So whatever it is, you are great. So cherish that little flaw in you. And think good things about yourself. Now, they're going to take that little flaw, seeing that they're flawless themselves, and they're going to try and make it into a big mountain out of a molehill. Why are they going to do that? They're going to do that because they feel like a big pile of not anything really good. And they want to project that onto you. And they want to project that onto you which is a little projection, is this little kind of psychological defense mechanism whereby I feel fat, so I tell you to lose weight.
I see.
So I feel like a bad person, so I'm going to tell you what a horrible person you are, and therefore I get to feel better about myself. So I'm going to tell you and brainwash you. And the way that I do this is I isolate you. Hmm. I make sure that you don't go over to your parents very often, or you don't have a lot of friends besides me. If you're in a relationship, of course, we have borderline parents, we have borderline children, we have borderline siblings. So there's lots of different ways that this works.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, right now I'm writing a book called Stop Walking on Eggshells for Parents. And right after I'm done with that, I got to jump on Stop Walking on Eggshells for Partners, because it is so different depending upon what the relationship is.
Oh, that's a good point.
But let's just say for the moment, it's a partner. So the person gets you alone and they get you isolated. And one way to combat this is, for one thing, don't let yourself get isolated. And always be with people who find the good in you and like you, and make sure that your partner or whoever the borderline or narcissist is in your life doesn't separate you from those people, and that you're always getting a wide variety of feedback from a wide variety of people.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, you're welcome. I just made it up just at this
moment. Oh, wow. I love it. I love it. It's so good. And you know, one of my...
I have to put it in a book somewhere.
Oh my gosh, you've got to write that down. One of my other favorite tips from your book, and I'm not sure which edition it is, maybe it's in all of the editions, is when, you know, there's a seed of doubt that has been planted, that you've allowed to be planted, right, with some kernel of truth, that one thing you can do is perform a reality check with somebody you consider to be a balanced being.
Well, that's, yeah, yes. You know, I have to tell you, I got out of a really bad relationship with somebody who wasn't narcissistic or borderline, but had some of the traits. And I was having a really hard time writing Stop Walking on Eggshells for Partners. It was like, it took me like 8 years, and I didn't realize it was taking me so long because I was in one of these relationships. Hmm. And I was having a terrible time. And what I finally did is I went to every really good friend and relative, and I said, tell me who I am. You know, like, what adjectives would you use to describe me?
Hmm.
And I just said, I'm having a hard time identifying myself, because this person took every little element of truth and made and exploded it up, you know, until it looked like one of those TV, you know, like one of those TVs that makes it so you could see every pore on the actress's face, you know, like, let's take everything about Randy that's bad and make it look like, you know, she's going to cause death to the earth. Randy is the coronavirus. That's it. She's caused 170,000 people to die just because of all of her flaws. So I had all of my friends and family write in and what they thought. And then, you know, some people would say the same thing again and again. And then I would say, okay, all right. So that was kind of like my solution to a masterful brainwashing.
That's amazing that, you know, the part where there's some people, and they're different people, saying the same thing over and over again. That's a great technique.
Well, actually, I thought you were going to say, Randy, are you so incredibly stupid that you wrote the book about this and yet you let this happen to you?
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that you are human, because I read all of your books. I know them very well. I study this, and it's still hard. And so I'm very glad to hear you say that.
I tell you a secret, everybody who writes these books are human. And we all get into it because we have some of this. And everybody who gets involved with BPD, whether it's somebody who treats somebody, somebody who's an advocate, you don't always know, but I've been doing this now for 25 years. And generally people get involved because they've got some kind of a personal, some kind of a personal interest. So to get back to your question, what do you do when you're starting to be brainwashed? You got to notice it right away. You got to get really on top of it. And
if a relationship is not making you happy, hey, I got out of that relationship and I live by myself and I made the house exactly what I wanted. And as I was mentioning during the soundtrack, I've got two great cats named Isabella and Madeline. And I'm living the life that everybody abhors, which is not to have a significant other. And, you know, not having a significant other who puts me down all the time, it's about the nicest life that I could ever have. It's not that bad.
Well, thanks for saying that.
I can't believe that everybody is truly afraid of this.
You're in good company, Randy, because as a single person, you know, I'm always thinking about the first couple months, the honeymoon stage of a relationship. But I love when people are really honest about the hard work, you know?
Oh, man, gosh, it's really hard work to be in a relationship. I'm actually now really best friends with the person who I was in the relationship with now that I've got that distance and I don't even let him give me an eye roll. You know, I'm like, no, we're not doing that anymore. Now we're just having the good parts of our relationship.
Well, I love that. And, you know, I like how you talk about in the book, too, that one of the keys to having good boundaries is knowing your inner self, your beliefs, your desires, your needs, your intuition. So it sounds like you're in a good spot with that, which makes the boundaries follow.
Well, let me tell you about the boundaries. I'm good friends now with the person I was in that relationship with. And I said something about myself and he rolled his eyes as if to say, oh, that's one of Randy's flaws. And I went back home and I thought about how I wanted to deal with this. And I dealt with it in an email. And I said, essentially, I said in a very nice way, you know, I think we need to leave that kind of a thing with our old relationship. I don't think it's going to work really well with our new relationship because we were getting along well. And the next time I was with him and he said, now, just so you know, I'm not saying this because I think you don't understand this, but I just want to let you know that, and I don't remember what it was about, but it was like he needed to caution me about something, but he wanted me to make sure that I understood that it wasn't because he thought I was dumb or something like that. And now he's really very, very careful not to do it. So something I have to say about setting boundaries is that I think everybody really can set boundaries. It's just that they need to make them click in a little bit earlier.
Mm.
For example, if I go to a grocery store and some stranger started to yell at me, I wouldn't put up with that. I mean, would you?
No.
I mean, imagine you go to a grocery store and somebody starts yelling at you because you're wearing a mask or you're not wearing a mask.
Good example.
I mean, you'd look at the store clerk, you'd say, where's the manager? You do that. But then you go home, you know, at some point, this is something that I wrote in a book that hasn't been published, or maybe it's just a rough draft or something like that. But I said, let's say that you're married and you're at home and your husband comes home and he says, you know what I've decided? We're going to become Mormons. I'm going to take several wives. We're going to move to Utah. We're going to take the kids. They're going to have a couple different sister wives and everything's going to be fine. What would you say?
That isn't one that I would wait to take care of itself, Randy. I would need to be proactive.
That probably isn't. So, okay. So you'd probably be able to find a place to say no under certain circumstances. Well, all you have to do is change the circumstances. Now, when that person comes home and says, say, I don't have a good feeling about you going out with your friends tonight. I really think, you know, you should stay home with me because if you love me, you really wouldn't want to be with your friends instead of me or something like that. You know, what you do is you react as if they just said, hey, how about some sister wives?
Right.
No, I don't think I want any sister wives. And I can sleep with you on Mondays. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. you know, it's just the way that I have talked about boundaries in this new book that I'm writing, I call them protecting your values, needs, and wants. Values, needs, and wants. That's how you protect your values, needs, and wants.
Nice.
So what do you value? Let's go back to the friend example. You value your friends. So you're protecting your values. It's not just that you think to yourself, should I spend the night here? Should I spend the day? Should I spend the night with my husband? Should I spend the night with my friend? What you think about is, what do you value? Do you value your friends? How much do you value your friends? And that way, when you think about your values, do you value your privacy? How much do you value your privacy? Do you value spending time with your children? What is your value? What is your need? And what is your want? So what you're doing is you're protecting those things. So when you don't know what to do, and when you don't know what your boundaries are, what you do is you think about, what are my values, what are my wants, and what are my needs?
I like that reframe, because the word boundaries has gotten a little bit of a bad rap. But I also like how you're talking about the importance of being more proactive about your boundaries, the same way that you might in the grocery store with a stranger, versus doing what I have historically done, which is sort of wait for a situation and kind of take care of itself to avoid conflict, and which of course leads to resentment. And when I'm feeling resentful, I can look at one person, and that's me. There's typically a boundary that's not been in place that needs to be. And one other question, Randy, you know, when somebody... This is something I've been studying and practicing, and I think it will be my life's work, and I know a lot of people feel the same way. But when you're newer at putting boundaries in place, or when you're newer at protecting your values versus letting it go and hoping that it'll take care of itself, it can sometimes feel really bad, you know, like you've robbed a bank because you're breaking an old pattern. When in reality, you've just put a boundary in place, it's kind of normal, like punishment fits the crime. Any tips there on the benefits of boundaries? And I'm assuming it's kind of like riding a bike, you know, that at first it's a little awkward, but it gets easier.
Sometimes it's tough to know what your boundaries are. And I think that you have to really listen to that little voice inside yourself. And maybe you don't know the first time. And you need to listen to that little voice inside yourself, because it forms your values form your identity. Right now we have Republican conventions and we have Democratic conventions, and the values that make you who you are will tell you which of those conventions you would be at if you were a politician. What are your values? That helps you form your identity. So your boundaries are not just about what you do or what you don't do. Your boundaries are really about forming. Boundaries form a person. They are around a person. They give you shape and definition. And figuring out what you value and what you want and what you need, if that isn't the essential thing that we have to do in this life, I don't know what is.
Oh,
because you're never going to get what you want unless you know what it is. You're never going to live with your values unless you know what they are. And if you're not living congruent to your values, then you're going to live with a lot of what is that called when you act differently than how you feel? And cognitive dissonance.
That's something that's pretty big right now.
Yes, yes. If you don't live according to your values, you're going to live with cognitive dissonance.
Oh, well said.
Yes, which means, like, let's say that you believe in faithfulness in a marriage. Totally believe in faithfulness in a marriage, but you put up with your husband's philandering, and because you don't want to get a divorce for very good reasons. And that's living with cognitive dissonance. And you're just never really quite happy when you're living with cognitive dissonance.
That's a great definition of cognitive dissonance, by the way.
Oh, thanks. I do this for a living.
Yeah. Hey, it shows.
That's basically what I do for a living. I'm not really a writer. I'm a professional explainer.
You've already given us the benefits of boundaries. They define you. They shape you. They form a person. I love that. And you've given us some great tips for developing boundaries. How about, is there anything that I've left out?
That it gets easier. It gets easier as you go along. It won't always be really hard. And it'll feel really, really good. I remember I was mentoring a child, and the child's mother was with me. And the child's mother was extremely immature, and she didn't give her child this ADHD pill. And the child was screaming the entire time. The mother wanted me to take her to I was driving them home from a grocery store, and the mother says, "Can you stop it? I want to get something from McDonald's." And I'm like, "No." I had this kid screaming in my ear, you know, without her ADD medication, because the mom had been in this grocery store sitting on this phone talking to her friends, letting me deal with this kid screaming in this grocery store. And I'm like, "No." And it felt really, really good.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Saying no can feel really, really good. So it won't always feel bad.
Yeah.
It'll get easier and it'll feel really good to say no.
I love that. And our listeners will love that. And I love how your books talk about how boundaries provide relief, which is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's just a relief. Either they might be a little hard on the front end, but the byproduct is relief, and that so in alignment. Randy, thank you for this, for taking the time today, and really for all of your advocacy efforts for people in relationships with a loved one with a personality disorder. And I thought it was kind of interesting in looking at your new book that is your forthcoming book in December. You know, back in the early 90s, you went viral with this before viral was even a thing.
Listen, you want to know something really weird? I was making money on the internet in 1996.
Yeah, you were viral before it was a thing.
When I got online, there was no such thing as the web. I was on America Online paying like God knows how much money. The book would not, Stop Walking on Eggshells would not have been possible without the internet, because that's how I learned everything, was through talking to people.
It shows. And I can just, you know, like I said earlier, remember feeling that relief and that, you know, the validation that had such soothing properties just reading it for the first time.
Yeah.
So thank you for, and I know that I'm not the only one that feels that way, but thank you for all of the work that you do. It really is the gold standard. And I'm wondering, how might our listeners be notified when the third edition of Stop Walking on Eggshells comes out, as well as other resources you might have?
Sure. Just go to my website, which is conveniently called stopwalkingoneggshells.com. And there is a sign up newsletter. And if you get on that sign up newsletter, you'll be notified not only when Stop Walking on Eggshells third edition comes out, but when Stop Walking on Eggshells for Parents comes out, Stop Walking on Eggshells for Partners comes out. And I'm redoing my website right now, just having some technical issues. And you'll be notified. And if you look at the latest issue of Stop Walking on Eggshells, when you get it in December, there are some resources in the back for depending upon what your particular, I just want to say, you know, it really, your particular needs are going to depend upon whether you have a borderline or narcissistic parent, spouse, child. You know, we've been really kind of partner heavy here, but it really does, you know, depend. And whoever you have in your family, there's some resource for you. Oh, one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
I have a free online support group called Moving Forward, and you can find more information about it at my website.
Okay.
So you go to free, and we have free Zoom support groups twice a week.
Oh, perfect. And I'll be sure to cite that when I post the podcast as well.
All right.
Randy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. And a reminder that you can rate and review me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And feel free to contact me at www.signadarpinian.com. We'll see you next month.